Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, November 7th. Permian Band Heading Back to State by Ruth Campbell. After a year and a half that has seen COVID uncertainty and no state band competition last year, Permian High School Band sets off for San Antonio today. The University Interscholastic League Marching Band Competition is Monday with finals on Tuesday at the Alamo Dome. The trip will include two semi-trucks, a travel trailer, 294 students, and a lot of snacks and meals. Director of bands Jeff Whitaker said being able to have band at all this year is a wonderful feeling. When the year started, we weren't sure if we were even going to be able to have a complete season, and it was very touch and go for our community, as we all remember in September and late August. We actually started at the end of July, but in August, things started getting really bleak in the hospitals and emergency rooms. What we noticed was we weren't really having an issue with our kids, which made us feel better about what we were doing and that we could do it safely without causing an issue for our students or our families, Whitaker said. But you just showed up every day, took another step forward to see what you could get done. There was a lot of energy from the students, from the staff, and I'll add parents to that list because everybody seemed to be real willing and ready to get started and to make something happen, he added. Whitaker said it's been a long journey. We started July 26th meeting together, and while we all knew it was a state year for us, no one really knew what that was going to look like. The show that we had planned was actually from the COVID year, and that was a different set of students, a lot of them which are here now, but the students that we had planned that show for back in 2018, many had graduated. And so we lost that senior class, including some of our students that we wanted to feature. The good news is that there were some really quality superstar young people that were ready to step up and take their place. We were able to adapt the show to fit the needs of our group that we have now, Whitaker said. He added that he could tell from the area competition last week that the band had a really good shot at making state. I try to not get in the headspace of watching our competition. I try not to let that interfere because you can only control what you do and what you're doing and while you're doing it. And so we try to stay focused on that mission, he said. He added that he's not saying they didn't watch videos or keep an eye out for other bands. We had an earlier Bands of America competition where we scored the highest we'd ever done, so I felt a momentum with our program at that time. But you never take it for granted. So when it came to the area contest, was I confident? I was confident that our kids could put out a great performance, Whitaker said. They decided not to focus on the win-loss scenario because that can produce a lot of anxiety. They decided to focus on the little things, do all the little things, and try to do the best they could. We knew if we could give a great performance that regardless of the results, we'd be proud of it, he said. The area competition was held at the Sun Bowl in El Paso, which was an unfamiliar stadium for Permian. Typically, the area contest is held in Odessa because it's centrally located. They did great with the traveling, and they had a focus about them that they knew that they were there to do their job as best they could, Whitaker said. He added that there were some issues with their computer system that made the performance a learning experience. It's just a fluke thing. It's never happened before, and it hasn't happened since. The computer that runs our electronics just wouldn't open up. That's just something you prepare for. We did have our show designed in a way that, hey, what if the electricity goes out? Can you still perform? And so we were sure to have backup plans. I think the last thing I told them before we took the field, and I know some of our other staff members were saying it as well, is if you don't hear the sound effects, do not let that bother you. Just keep going. You may not hear sound today. No big deal. just perform at your best, and sure enough, there was no sound from the electronics. That was something that I was also proud of. Our kids, in that moment, when things didn't go our way, they still did their utmost to perform at the highest level possible. And fortunately for the judges, it was still good enough. I take that as encouragement about what this team is made of, how resilient these young people are, and that in a very competitive moment that they did focus on the little things. There wasn't one thing they could have done about it in that moment. All they could do is what they could do, what they were trained to do, and do it at their best, and they certainly did. That's what put us there. After the performance, no one was sure. We didn't get to see anyone else. We were the last ones to go, so we didn't get to even watch our competition. That may be good or bad, because that can psych you up or psych you out if you watch a lot of performances prior to, so we just had to focus on what we could do. And they really stepped up to the plate, and the young people, probably just as impressive or maybe more so, was the folks that were the young students that run the electronics that didn't give up for the entire show. They tried for the entire 7.5 minutes to get that working, and they performed as well as they could have. They were working, they were doing all the visuals, and at the end, they fought. They did their best. It was a professional moment for a young person in a scary situation, he added. The theme this year is Desert Fire Dance, so there is desert scenery produced in-house. The show will be 7 minutes and 45 seconds. The University Interscholastic League requires between 5 and 8 minutes. Whitaker said, "You don't want to go over that because it means instant disqualification." There are 38 bands in the state competition, and there were 13 in area, with the top two going to state. The band will find out Monday night whether they will advance to finals. The preliminary competition is Monday. It starts early in the morning and runs all day. About 8:30 at night, they will begin the drum major retreat and do the announcements, and the top 12 bands out of that 38 will advance to a finals competition, which will take place on Tuesday. The band's planned return is Tuesday. Samuel Ramirez Marr, a 17-year-old senior clarinetist, Madeline Dupre, a 17-year-old senior color guard member, Colton Leadingham, a 17-year-old senior percussionist, and Connor Hayslip, a 17-year-old senior baritone player, were all pleased about going to state after the year of COVID. Only the top 30 bands in Texas get to go. It's a big state, so it's kind of a big honor at the same time, Leadingham said. He added that there are nerves and excitement about going to state. "I just think it's a great opportunity getting to experience it," Hayslip said. Hayslip said he is very enthusiastic going into the competition and feels the band will do very well. "Basically, all the hard work and all the time spent in the morning just practicing is what gives him that feeling," Hayslip added. MCHS Foundation Aims to Help Vets by Michael Bauer. The Medical Center Health System Foundation will have two fundraising campaigns this week focused on helping veterans being treated at Medical Center Hospital. MCHS will partner with Bubba's 33 on November 10th and Corporal Ray's Coffee at its Odessa location at 3111 Faudry Road, Suite A, on November 11th. Both businesses will donate 10% of their proceeds those days to the MCHS Foundation to help veterans being treated at MCHS with their health care needs. On November 10th, Bubba's 33, located on 6153, Texas 191, will have its fundraisers. 10% of all total food and non-alcoholic purchases at its Odessa location will be donated to assist veterans at Medical Center Health System. Customers will have the option to donate additional funds when paying their bill. The same goes for Corporal Ray's Coffee, and just like with Bubba's 33, The money raised will fund vital treatments, equipment, charitable care, and other necessities for veterans who receive medical care while at MCHS. MCHS Projects Manager Rita Mata said this is the first year that MCHS has partnered with Corporal Ray's Coffee and Bubba's 33 for Veterans Day. "This was something that has been close to my heart," Mata said. "We honor our veterans here, but it's usually during the time of death. We have an honor walk for them when we have a veteran that's passed in our hospital. But we knew that we needed to honor our veterans while they're still here, living. So we wanted to find ways to honor them while they were still here and receiving services from us. So we reached out to Bubba's and Corporal Ray's, and they were on board. That's how this all came to fruition." When doing a different fundraiser for the first time, Mata talked about some of the challenges that occur, but that she is grateful to get members of the community and partners on board in helping provide crucial treatments for veterans at MCHS. "Everybody respects a veteran, and you want to give them the honor that they deserve," Mata said. "If you don't have a veteran in your family, you don't know the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on, so when you go on about those things, it opens people's eyes and makes them more aware of the process that does go on. When you give them that background, that takes that obstacle out. It's more educational, I guess you could say, and they want to help out." Corporal Ray's Coffee, which is owned by the Bevel family, is dedicated to their son Ray, who died while serving in Iraq in 2007. The support from Andrews and around the Permian Basin led the family to open a coffee shop to honor their fallen son. "We all know Corporal Ray's story and how that business came to fruition," Mata said. "My husband is actually a veteran and was a good friend of Corporal Ray, and that story hit close to home whenever this idea came about. We actually received some money from the Chris Kyle statue. That was part of the agreement when it was built that any money left over would come back to our foundation." Quick hits. Former official arrested. Paul Garza Jr., former Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce CEO, has been charged with theft of property, a second-degree felony. According to the affidavit, unauthorized transactions for the Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce were made over a period of 6 months for an estimated total of around $52,000. Garza was arrested and booked at the Law Enforcement Center. Obituary and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. Velma Aola Talbert, age 89, went to her heavenly home on November 1st. She was born Velma Aola Light on January 3, 1932, in Hermley, Texas, to Jim and Stella Light. Those left to cherish her memory are her husband Bill Talbert, son Timothy Talbert, daughter Rebecca Talbert, and many friends and extended family. Velma is preceded in death by her parents, infant son Kirk Talbert, brothers Carol Light and George Light, and her sisters Wilma Campbell, Stella Hignite, and Mabel Riggs. Memorial services will be held on Monday, November 8th at 1 p.m., at Eisenhower Church of Christ in Odessa. Condolences may be made to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Yvonne Contreras Cash Bellamy, 65, of Monahans, died Monday, November 1st in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m., November 8th at Grace Fellowship. Burial to follow at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Pastor Mark Bristow is officiating. Arrangements are by Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans. Luis Orona Patino, 77, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 31st in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. November 9th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Visitation will be open to the public on Monday, November 8th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., Rosary will start at 6 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Fernando is officiating. Jack Ray Windham, 83, of Odessa, died Tuesday, November 2nd, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. November 8th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, November 8th. It's Diabetes Awareness Month. Getting tested is easier than ever. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. On this list of diseases and conditions I hate, COVID has now become number one. I have never seen any condition cause so much suffering. It is an awful disease, probably taking the worst toll I've seen on people in terms of destroying their health in the short term and even in the medium term. The longer term, 20 years from now, I am terrified to even think about. But COVID, for me, takes that number one spot because it's also destroyed so many things not directly related to health: the economy, businesses small and large, how we shop, how we engage socially. Has changed the political climate and even our civility and respect toward other human beings. The rest of my list is much more limited to the disease itself. They all just moved down a spot when COVID took over the top. Cancer is my number two, and diabetes is my number three. The good things about cancer and diabetes is every year they get a little less awful. We're getting so much better at early detection, treatments, and management of both of those diseases. The best thing on those conditions is that cures are within reach. Diabetes, in some ways more than cancer, has seen some big gains in the last decade. When I was a young nurse, diagnosis of diabetes was based on symptoms, serial fasting blood glucose levels, and glucose tolerance testing. Now it is a very simple blood test that literally can be done in most physicians' offices in minutes. That test is a hemoglobin A1C, or HbA1c. HbA1c is a test that, with a one-time blood sample as small as a drop of blood from a finger stick, can tell you and your physician what your average blood sugar has run over the last 3 months. The way that works is very simply. It takes about 30 days to make a blood cell, and they live about another 60 days. As those cells are being made and floating around in the circulation, they absorb glucose, the type of sugar that your cells use for energy, based on how high or low the glucose in the blood is over that period. Think of HbA1c like a batting average for a baseball player. It doesn't tell you what one game looks like. It tells you about the player's performance over the season. One game doesn't show who is great or terrible in baseball, but that batting average sure does. Basically, HbA1c levels works like this. If your HbA1c is 4, your average blood glucose level is about 70, which is on the low side of normal. Between 4 and 5.6 is considered a normal HbA1c level. Their blood glucoses average between about 70 and about 115. Someone with an HbA1c is 5.7 to 6.4, their average blood glucose is running about 120, which is the high end of normal. That range is known as pre-diabetes. A person is considered diabetic when their HbA1c is 6.5 or above. The ranges get interesting at that point. A HbA1c of 7, which is the top end of where a diabetic and their healthcare provider ideally should target management, is average glucose of 154. a HbA1c of 12, a level we see commonly in the hospital with poorly managed diabetes, is a blood glucose of 298, triple a normal mid-range blood glucose level, and nearly double a well-managed diabetic's blood glucose level. HbA1c is so reliable that its ease of testing has made it much simpler for healthcare providers in finding the right medications for their patients, helping assess the risk of diabetes for that person, and developing a care plan that has lasting impact and limits the horrible complications that many diabetics face, like heart disease and strokes, renal failure, loss of circulation to arms and legs, poor wound healing, both of which can lead to amputations, blindness, and many other very challenging health conditions. But mostly, HbA1c has helped us understand pre-diabetes. We have learned that if we start managing pre-diabetes with diet, exercise, weight loss, and sometimes medications, we can keep people from ever becoming diabetic. An estimated 80 million people in the U.S. over 20 have pre-diabetes and don't know it. Diabetes is like everything else in healthcare. Prevention is the best medicine, and if you can't prevent, intervene early. During the month of November, many organizations offer free or greatly discounted HbA1c testing. If you haven't had an HbA1c done recently, consider getting that testing and then discussing the results with your primary healthcare provider. Don't be one of those people who are pre-diabetic and don't know it until they are diagnosed with diabetes and facing major complications.
Hello, this is Michael reading an obituary and a death notice published in the Odessa American, Monday, November 8, 2021. Leroy Lewis Bud Brown, Pittsboro, North Carolina. Leroy Bud Lewis Brown, 91, of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, passed away on 5 November 2021 in Pittsboro, North Carolina. Bud was born in Lincoln, Nebraska on 17 July 1930 to the late Leroy James Brown and Helen Lewis Brown. He married Mary Elizabeth Conrad on 3 May 1952 in Beatrice, Nebraska. They were married for 62 years until Mary's death on 6 October 2014. He married Jane Faber on 30 September 2017 in Durham, North Carolina. They were married for 4 years. Bud is survived by his wife, Jane Faber Brown of Durham, North Carolina. Son James Lee Brown and wife Stephanie of Pittsboro, North Carolina. Stepson Bob Faber and wife Elizabeth of Singapore. Stepdaughter Sarah Cameron of Durham, North Carolina. Grandsons Christopher Brown and wife Meredith of Durham, North Carolina. Chris Clark and wife Mandy of Odessa. Jared Clark of Odessa and Zach Cameron of Durham, North Carolina. Granddaughters Kelly Brown Little and husband Bobby of Prosper, Texas. Amy Wraith Jen Bell and husband Landon of Odessa. Taylor Cameron of Durham, North Carolina. Noel Faber of Singapore and Nadia Faber of Singapore. Plus grandsons and granddaughters. Bud is preceded in death by his wife, Mary Elizabeth Conrad Brown. Daughter Barbara Jean Brown Wraith Jen. Parents Helen Lewis and Leroy James Brown. Brother Jerry Brown and sister Amy Gail Clausen. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, 10 November 2021 at Pleasant Hill Baptist Church in Pittsboro, North Carolina. Interment will be at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. A memorial graveside service will be held in Odessa at a later date. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you consider making a memorial donation in Leroy Brown's honor to Cora Food Pantry, 40 Camp Drive, Pittsboro, North Carolina, 27312. Death Notice. Velma Iola Tolbert, Odessa. Velma Iola Tolbert, 89, of Odessa, died Monday, November 1st, 2021, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Monday, November 8th, 2021, at Eisenhower Church of Christ. Brother Alan Weakland is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Sleeping position and nightmares. To your good health for Saturday. Dear Dr. Roach, I seem to have an issue with nightmares. They are vivid, and I wake up feeling more tired than when I went to sleep. Oddly, they only happen when I'm sleeping on my back. People who have observed me when I sleep have indicated I often hyperventilate while I'm having one of these nightmares. If I can make myself sleep on my side or stomach, I seem to be able to get through the night without issue. Does sleeping position actually matter when it comes to nightmares? Should I see my doctor? Dr. Roach writes, The association of sleep position with nightmares has been evaluated since the time of Freud. I found evidence that sleeping on the back is associated with a higher frequency of nightmares than side sleeping, but left-sided sleepers have more nightmares than right-sided sleepers. In at least one case report, the person with nightmares only on his back was found to have obstructive sleep apnea, and his nightmares improved when he started on CPAP therapy. If you have risk factors for sleep apnea, such as being overweight, or additional symptoms, morning headache, snoring, falling asleep easily during the day, I would definitely discuss with your doctor.
Cheating husband obsesses over cheating wife's lover. Dear Abby, my wife and I have been married for 21, mostly, happy years. However, last year I had an affair that lasted for several months. I confessed to my wife and we separated for about a month while I tried to evaluate what I should do. In the end, I returned home and asked for forgiveness and reconciliation. Obviously, my wife has struggled with my infidelity, but to her credit, she's trying hard to make things work. During our separation, we had little contact, and she told me that for revenge, she'd slept with someone else. I know that what's good for the goose is good for the gander, but the guy is less than half our age, and I'm struggling with the mental image and thoughts of trying to match his level of stamina and energy, if you know what I mean. I know I messed up, but I love my wife and with my whole heart, and I'm working hard to demonstrate it. How do I purge my thoughts of the image of my wife with another man? Signed, Remorseful in California. Dear Remorseful, it may not be easy. Don't you think your wife has had similar images of you and the woman you cheated with? Infidelity hurts everyone involved. You and your wife are working to remain united. Concentrate on that rather than preoccupying yourself with your insecurities, and you'll both be better off. Dear Abby, I am medically healthy and in my mid-60s. I have two adult children, and my grandchildren range in age from 14 to 20. I have a loving relationship with everyone. However, my family members are self-involved and have indirectly expressed that they do not want me to live with them when I am no longer able to live by myself. I have raised the subject and seen eye rolls and facial gestures between them. My daughter lives several states away and has said I'm welcome in her home, but as a snowbird only. Abby, I don't want to be placed in a nursing home only to be abandoned and alone. What do you advise? Signed, Unwanted in New Jersey. Dear Unwanted, because your children are averse to you eventually living permanently with them, start now to prepare for the time when you may no longer be able to live by yourself. Begin by talking to friends of both genders and find out if they have a similar problem. If they do, consider banding together and buying a house or a condo together so you can help each other. This has worked for other seniors, and it may be the solution to your problem. Dear Abby, my teenage grandson plays on his middle school's football team. He's a great player, but the team never wins. It's hard to watch him play his heart out when the team loses in the 38-0 range. I'm proud of his efforts, and I want to encourage him to continue to do his best no matter what the final score is. Do you have any suggestions on the healthiest way to sympathize with him about the loss without discouraging him? Signed, Proud of Him in the West. Dear Proud of Him, I think what you are already doing is the right approach. By attending these events, you're telling your grandson how proud you are of the fact that he gives his all when he competes and that you respect him for it. Then take him out for a post-game dinner and treat.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.